So Jim's with us. What do you think of Mountain Lion? The announcement.
I haven't really read into it too much other than the default setting of only allowing Mac Store app and, or Mac Store apps and Sign apps and being able to, you know, so it's basically, it's the way it ships, it's locked down a bit like iOS, but you can just flip the switch in the settings and allow unsigned apps to run. And it's kind of cool that they're allowing signed apps that are not App Store apps. So like if you are developing an application that requires like a, you know, root or some other kind of low level access to whatever, you can do that and have people run your app without any problem and publish it yourself, but it doesn't fit within the Mac App Store rules, so it wouldn't be, you know, handled through that. And so it's kind of cool that they're definitely going for the crafted iOS like ecosystem of applications, but they're not really bringing the hammer down at the same time too hard.
I think it might be a pretty good compromise if you think about the majority of users. Of course, like you said, people can turn that off because there's programs like graphics programs like GNU, image manipulation program, and yeah, all sorts of open source apps that people sometimes use on Mac. But I guess less and less, are you right? I mean, yeah, a lot more and more stuff runs through the App Store, at least the ones that can. Yeah, the feature you're talking about, I think they're calling Gatekeeper. I think that is really significant. Like you said, that you can have App Store apps and Apple developer certificate signed apps, but you can't, like you have to change a setting to allow unsigned apps, and that really, I think that is the biggest change. I guess there's stuff like Messages, which brings iMessages from iOS also to Mac, right? And then they're trying to make iCloud really integrated.
You're finally going to be able to write to, like, the iCloud file system. You know, you've had access to, like, store and, like, certain apps can, you know, use iCloud storage for things, but not really a lot of them. But if you remember back in the mobile me era, you had the little iDisk where you could just have that sync storage across any Mac that you have. And they kind of got rid of that with iCloud. And I'm glad to see that's going to be back in a way with further iCloud integration.
It seems really interesting. Like, they're trying to make it so that you can use a Mac file system much the same way you use the iOS file system, i.e. Files just auto-saving and they're trying to abstract away a lot of the file system, right? Because they give you two options when you save as, and with apps that are optimized for that, for Mountain Lion, and one is save as to the file system, like traditional way, and then the other is save as to your iCloud account, and you just, it's something that is, I guess, like, you know, trying to be much more iOS-like. I guess they're putting Game Center in there, but that's not a big deal. But one thing that jumped out at me on top of that was Notification Center. You know, I think I kind of had gotten pretty annoyed with Growl, and I don't use it anymore. I wonder if Apple is going to be able to get notifications right on Mac, and maybe knock, maybe people won't, you know, I don't know if Growl has much future after, you know.
Yeah, you know, ever since I updated to the last one where you could, they brought it to the App Store, right? And it's a paid app now, and it was kind of annoying to begin with. I think we both agree that the implementation is pretty, like, so-so at best, and it was just kind of obnoxious to me. It was, you know, something that so many apps that I had used it that I figured, heck, but not too long ago, I just got rid of it altogether because it was like, you know, I don't pay for it. It's not really that important to me.
maybe Apple's notification center will be more unobtrusive. It's really hard to say.
I wasn't really even aware of notification center in Mac, but I'm looking at the website right now, and it looks very iOS like. But that's notification center has been a very strong update. It's one of the better updates to the OS that Apple's done in a while. And I know it kind of mimics the functionality that Android One, and I guess Palm probably did it best before all of them. But either way, it's going to be nice to have that centralized.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think I gotta let you go soon. I just wanted to ask you one more thing about how do you like? I know you're using iTunes Match, right? I was just wondering how you like using that.
It's pretty good, except, I started using significantly more bandwidth, and I had the freedom to just do that wherever, and now I'm on AT&T's notorious top 5% list, so even though I'm on unlimited, the throttle kicks in at 2 gigs, whereas people pay the exact same amount as me for a capped bandwidth plan, and they have 3 gigs, so I think it's kind of bullshit, and I think that AT&T should definitely raise it to 3, that barrier, because when they throttle you, they bring you down to sub 2G speeds. It has 3G response times, like the pings are still decent and whatever, but you capped it about like 10 to 15 kilobytes a second down, and it's just like it totally cripples the way you use your phone. It makes it a paperweight for the last week or two of your cycle until you are unfrottled again for the start of the next billing cycle. So it's pretty obnoxious. And I think iTunes Match like kicked me over to the 5%, the top 5%. So other than that, I think it's pretty convenient. And it's nice because if your computer crashes and you don't have your iTunes backed up, if you had all that stuff synced to iTunes Match, when you reinstall the OS or replace your hard drive, whatever, you go to iTunes, put in your account, and you can download your entire collection before that you had. So either the matched versions, or if it didn't have a match for it, it uploads your actual data and the metadata for it. So I think iTunes Match is really nifty, and I wanted to see more apps interface with it. Or I don't know how deep the APIs are for it, but things like the DJ app and stuff, it would be pretty nice if you could download on the go and start doing it on that, because when you view the songs in that app, you can't tell if they're synced or not. Like, they just show it shows your whole library, and then half the songs you try picking, you haven't downloaded your phone yet, and it just says, it gives you like a generic this song is DRM'd, like error message. So it's kind of obnoxious. So I'd like to see them make it easier to interface with, but other than that, it's pretty cool for just having your entire collection accessible.
Yeah, I haven't tried iTunes Match. I think I very well might. Well, later in the show, I'm gonna talk about an app that I'm using that actually hooks in to Google Music, and I've been using that. Now, I think Google Music is kind of cool because you can stream music from your collection after you upload it, but I don't think it's really comparable to iTunes Match because it doesn't really seem to work as a locker service, and maybe I don't know all the functionality, but it's something where if you upload it into the silo of Google Music, then you can access it through the web and now through some apps, which is pretty cool, but it doesn't seem like it's easy to download the MP3 file back or the M4A file back. And maybe if you've purchased through Google Music, it's easy to do that, but otherwise not. But, it's like, it definitely has some limitations. So though it's free right now, it might be looking to iTunes Match to actually get those, those full features that you're talking about, the matching to the higher bitrate song, and also the ability to get the actual MP3 back, right, and, on your drive.
Mm-hmm. I thought about checking Google service. Doesn't Amazon also have one these days?
I think they have a Music Locker service too, and that's the one I don't really know anything about. So that, but that I think they do have like an Amazon cloud music service or something like that.
See, like I really probably wouldn't use those unless I was using Android, and I don't know. I haven't really even given them much thought. Because you know, iTunes Match is only $25 a year. Mm-hmm. It's really not too much for right. me. The convenience, the way it interfaces with everything I already have, is much. It's worth it to me just to have it work a little smoother. But it is cool that there's those options out there if you don't want to pay for it. But I did, and I haven't really looked back.
Cool. Well, that's good endorsement. All right. Well, I better let you go. So thanks for joining us, Jim.
Yeah. See ya.
The waves crash over me. Here, Saltwater by Niner from the forthcoming Niner 2 LP. And that's a record that I'm making with my wife, Jessica, who joins me now.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me, baby.
Well, thank you for joining me on the DJMCloud.com podcast, number 26. It's February 19th, 2012, and we're going to continue as we talk about the Google Music iOS app and some other stuff. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about the music we were working on, Jessica.
Yeah, February has been a very creative month. We've been making lots of music, and songs are just sort of coming spontaneous from a lot of inspiration. I think Dan and I are really open to, you know, the surroundings around us and making really great songs. And Saltwater is for all those people that are going through tough times. You know, you have to just find that inner strength and keep going, because if you keep it up, you'll be kept up. I heard that in my yoga class today. I thought that was really cool. So if you keep going, you know, people will keep supporting you.
Well, that's a very inspirational message from that song. And yeah, we have some songs that we've played on other podcasts, and that's the debut of playing a fragment of that song. I think that it's really interesting kind of recording session that we've done, because we have a broader range of musical tools than we've had previously, because I have my Telecaster guitar along with my Les Paul, and I have my old Fender amp along with the Line 6 amp. In addition to being able to use the M Audio keyboard MIDI controller with the computers we have, we also have iPhones and an iPad, and that allows a lot of different interfaces for creating music. And I think it definitely really does come down to the self-expression part of it, though, what you were saying earlier. So I think that after this short break, we can talk a little bit about some online social networking kind of commerce stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we might look for a microphone next, so look forward to reviews of what we find. And I also hear there are rumors that Niner is going to be performing a live set. So stay tuned to @PacificPelican and @JessicaMcKeown on Twitter to see where we're going to be.
Very cool. And you can check the band website at blogs.sf3am.com/Niener. Well, now I really think that I want to bring up this story that I read. It's on like Bloomberg. I think that the basic thrust of the story is that there are a series of retailers who have existing online operations who had decided in the last year, roughly, to open storefronts on Facebook as well. And these include GameStop, Nordstrom, Gap, and others. And it turns out those three I've mentioned and others have all shut down their Facebook storefront. So I was looking to Jessica, who might have some insight into this and the kind of story behind it.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people see that Facebook and Twitter have the potential to be sources of getting their customers into their websites, getting them into their stores, getting them to spend money with them. So you build this relationship with people, and if commerce comes up, you have an answer to provide. But simply just putting up the store, it's like you have all these customers on Facebook, and if you don't really spend time to understand who they are and what they want in that Facebook store of your brand, then it's not going to be successful. You know, your Facebook audience is there for different reasons, and you need to find out what that is. And, you know, you can use the Facebook analytics as a pretty good start, and you can use your own engagement metrics. So how would you go about any relationship? How would you go about finding out where people are? One thing that you can do is you can pose a type of question that would require them to like the post or to answer the post or to post a picture. And you see where your fan base is. How involved are they? How engaged are they? Can't go asking them to post videos if you can't even get people to like or share your posts. Okay. So, you know, you gotta work into that and figure out who your fans are. Who are your people that are there every day? You may have thousands and thousands of fans. Look at that talking about. That's about the sort of active nature of your page. And then their immediate reach. So you do want a lot of fans, but you want your fans talking. It's one thing to have numbers. You want to engage them, get them excited. They have a lot of competition on Facebook. So then you catch them in the moment when they're ready to buy, and then you provide that opportunity. But it has to be relevant. I'm looking for a really great heel. I'm looking for the perfect black dress. I'm looking for a great summer outfit. You know, what was in the Nordstrom store? How are they merchandising it? You know, do they really understand their customer? So it's a whole new world. And unfortunately, for marketers, you know, you have to play by Facebook's rules and Twitter's rules, right? Twitter, mm-hmm. No analytics, although rumor has it it's coming soon. And if you're an advertiser, you get access to it. Yeah. Facebook is starting to, you know, give you a little bit more data, but it's really, you know, kind of trapped in their system. So you got to get smart and you got to really figure out if people are going to want to buy stuff and test it, you know, see what they're interested in. Depends on your price point, depends on what you're selling. So you have to kind of gauge it. I don't know what Nordstrom was trying to sell, and I'm sure Old Navy did their sort of mass appeal, but
I guess that it may have been a subset of their full online inventory, but I can't say to what they were actually doing operations-wise.
I mean, here's the thing. These people, these fans of yours, they have labeled themselves with you, and they have said, you are going to be part of my stream. I want to hear from you. So make it exclusive, make it important, you know, for them to want to go to that store. What are unique pieces that you can have in that store for them, for that shopping experience, you know? It's, you know, the business that I work at, I mean, we have our referring social traffic, you know, tracking sales. So people are going to your Facebook pages to get those instantaneous reviews, those thumbs up that this is a great product, you know? So you want to make sure that you're engaging people and you're keeping them happy.
Definitely. Well, I really, I think that really is a good take on that story. Now, if people want to read the underlying story, which actually is just the basic facts, of the story, not a lot of interesting analysis like Jessica can offer. But if you want to see that, a link to that, you can go to the show notes. Those are at djmcloud.com, and then just look for the post about podcast 26. And it'll be in the show notes there. Now, I have a website that I've mentioned briefly. Now, I like to keep mentioning it in the podcast because then I put in the show notes and then I give it another link because it needs to move up. If people, it's danmckeown.info. Now, I think it's, if you look at just an unlogged in Google page, it seems to come up fairly high in the third page. But we know that's not good enough. We know that's not nearly good enough. Coming up second on the third page, what does that mean? That means it's like 22nd or something at best. Like it's not any good. So I have to try to keep that thing moving up with more links. So hey, you know, if you have a website, I know most people don't really like keep like blogs these days. They might have a social media presence or something. But if you can send a link out to danmckeown.info, that links to my other stuff, and that'll move. Move it up when people type that in.
What is that page for you now? Is that your homepage for everything? Is that what you want this to be?
Well, no, it's basically a landing page, but one click takes you to the blog at djmcloud.danieljmckeown.com, and then one click takes you to subscribing to the podcast. So it's a good, you know, quick front page for any user to be able to see. And you know, whether you're on touch screen or desktop, you can click on a few things and get access to some of the stuff I'm doing. It's just you know, a way to make it easy to find me, because you know, I usually use danieljmckeown.com is the site that I actually, you know, put more stuff on.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's just a matter of covering bases and having different, you know, different URLs for different searches.
I should get mine.
I've definitely wanted to order one for you.
That's a romantic, geeky Valentine, by Valentine, a domain name. It's probably too late for Valentine's Day.
But you can grab me one for Valentine's Day. Well, not this year.
Though. Next year.
I think that there are just a couple other things that I wanted to mention before we got going. I think if you're a user of a desktop OS, whether it's Linux, or Apple OS X or Windows. And I think even like FreeBSD, there's a version for almost any platform, the VLC Media Player. Now they have a new version 2.0 out. And I think it really updates the interface. Instead of just an old school kind of simple player look, it gives an interface that allows quick creation of playlists, drag of media files onto the application to autoplay, and you know, some basic feature improvements. I wouldn't call the way it looks right now in OS X beautiful, but I would call it like, you know, nice and functional and definitely an improvement. You saw me open that app earlier. What did you think of it, Jessica?
That looked nice. Maybe elementary is the word.
Yeah, it's definitely like an improvement from what they had had before, though, I think, is the biggest thing for me. I do think that it definitely, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Winamp crossed with iTunes. You know, it still is better than just the what VLC until very recently looked like, which by default, which I would say is an ugly copy of an old QuickTime player. So, you know, it's going places. I don't know, but you know, but where exactly those places are, I guess, is another issue. But I do think it's pretty cool. You know, it's cool to see. And I mean, you know, you got to give a lot of props to what VLC does, because they allow a lot of different formats to play on different computers. So if people have stuff that's heavily encoded with H.264 or AAC or whatever other encodings that may play easily, say on Apple and maybe sometimes on Windows now, but say on Linux and in certain situations, it's hard to play those formats. And VLC is like a tool that'll play like really so many formats. I probably can't say all, but like, you know, so many audio and video formats, especially, you know, the desktop version is just, it's really cool for that. So now the interface is at least a little better, you know, to go with all that underlying power at the back end.
All right. So all you coders and designers and UX people and techies, get together and help out VLC, improve what it looks like, because it's good stuff, and we all know we all need to work together to make the best stuff. So share your talents and make this player even better.
That's a very cool idea, because that is the type of project that VLC is. So
mm-hmm.
So I definitely encourage people to have some talent or some energy or even both to get involved with it. Now I have another app I want to talk about. This is an iOS app. We're getting into the iOS apps category. This app is called Nebulous Notes. Nebulous Notes is a iOS note-taking app that you can use to create text files and edit text files. And you can save those text files to Dropbox. That's basically what it does. But I think it's pretty cool, and it's good and effective at doing that. So it makes it very easy to I don't know. I would say it makes it fairly easy to create text files and really. I guess it's kind of a geeky tool. I think I bought it for $4 in the App Store. You know, prices can go up and down, but I think that was what it was at. But I think it may be kind of a geeky thing, but I think this is really cool, because, you know, it gives you a chance to interact with text files that are sitting on your desktop computer, assuming you have your desktop computer synced with your Dropbox account. So this is a file that, say, you know, you have. If you're, you know, you have to have a Dropbox account, but you can get the basic one for free if you don't have one. But then if you have the Dropbox account and you have the Dropbox app, it's very easy to just like one or two presses, and you have you've logged in with Nebulous Notes to Dropbox. So then you just select a directory, and then you go and to create new text file, and you're creating like files. You're creating text files in a very simple interface. That I guess the it kind of fits along with the distraction free writing kind of idea. But then you know once you've done that, you can hit like a kind of like a cloud button on your file list and make sure that it's on there, and then you'll see it pop up on your desktop computer. Like I said, if it's synced, and then you can also go into existing notes and read them and edit them as well. So I wouldn't consider this a direct competitor to Evernote for everything, but it takes a different type of approach, but it does do a lot of the same kinds of things. And the advantage with Evernote is that it is more of a rich app interface, and it saves the notes in the cloud behind the scenes. Here, this allows you, but also forces you, essentially, to actively manage the files that you create with the notes. But given that there's a lot of those old-school file system-loving computer geeks out there that maybe can find a way to make iOS work with its abstracted file system, but like being able to go through the old Finder and stuff like that on OS X, this is the type of app that allows that a level of direct interaction with text files that you may have to do some pretty convoluted things with other apps in order to be able to do. So yeah, I think that it does have some uses, for me, I enjoy it. Having like seen like a quick run through from me about that, and being someone who does use Evernote sometimes, what would you say about the two compared to each other?
It sounds like they have both serve their purposes, and you probably use Evernote more for note taking stuff. But if you ever wanted to do any sort of file stuff, or maybe recommend that one to like your dad or something. Or Joe, something like more like just a simple basic one.
Yeah, I think there is a very great deal of simplicity to it, especially if you're already a Dropbox user and you want to use Nebulous Notes. I do like Evernote for certain things as well.
I think the thing with note apps though is like there's only one spot, right? Like you kind of want to start, for me anyway, using one note app, and you don't really want to start using different ones because you're like, well, what did I put in that one? And this one, I think maybe it sounds like, you probably have certain kind of files in the Nebulous Notes, like ones related to. So like you would run something off of Dropbox, like you'd run your computer off of Dropbox, and then you like would update text files, and your server would hit your Dropbox and read those new text files you sent up from Nebulous Notes. Update your website.
You know what? That's another layer that using something like DropDav or something, I think it probably would be possible to do that, and that's a very good point, but I have not actually experimented with extending Nebulous Notes and Dropbox to posting to the web. But I'm pretty sure that there are several different, tool chains that could be utilized to try to do that right now. But you know what? That's a very good point in the sense that I've already thought through a somewhat cruder way of doing it, in the sense that I might create a note on Nebulous Notes in a format that would work well with a site powered by my PacificPelican.us/CMS system, and then I can just use an FTP server to quickly upload the text file directly from my directly on my computer directly up to the to the cloud. Maybe even use an FTP client program on iOS. I haven't really experimented with that, but there might be some available. And then I can actually just post to my Pacific Pelican CMS powered sites as a post, because those posts are just powered by the individual TXT files. So it's meant to be extendable like that. So I can actually create for something like that with it. And then the other angle on it is that, let's say that with having it in one place, that's a great idea. I think that it's going to be harder to get it into Evernote than into a format that's compatible with Nebulous Notes. And by that I mean, as long as you're okay with having, like, going through your Evernote every once in a while and exporting everything as like a HTML file or a text file or something, I think you can do it as a text file. I know you can do it as an HTML file. Then if you can export that and then make it in a file type that's like your the Nebulous Notes TXT, you know, text files you create, then maybe like eventually you can have them all in one directory and have them searchable on the file system. But you know what? That's a good point in terms of being able to search within Evernote. You know, I don't know how really you push your Nebulous Notes into Evernote, but that's another, you know, geek, you know, tool that might be around or maybe needs, you know, to be invented. Well, I do have one more iOS app to mention, and that's Melodies Pro. Now, I think, you know, this app was a bug or two, and I bought it. What this app does is it allows you to play songs that are in your Google Music collection. Now, I was talking with Jim earlier in the podcast about Google Music, so suffice to say, it's a service you can upload your music to and then use to stream the music. And I do think Melodies Pro is very cool, because instead of having to just use the mobile Safari web interface for Google Music, you can actually have an app playing it that actually just acts in a lot of ways like a music player app. It has this kind of wood trim look. It's okay, but basically works, and you can play by artists and by by other criteria like album genre. So I think that it works pretty well to just get access to your collection, as long as you've put your collection on Google Music and then logged in with your account. You've been listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown, and with Jessica for this these last few segments. And thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.